The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Monday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my good friend and colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to talk about a unique convergence of player and team that's happening just in the nick of time to create a playoff run, how Scott Skiles has been able to consistently control the thermostat and turn down the heat, and yeah, it's one day before Valentine's Day, but we're going to tell you about a college basketball coach that we've been wanting to send roses to just about every February.
So, Dave, first take on a Monday, tons of action over the weekend. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Well, a fascinating basketball weekend. So many intriguing things happened across the NBA and college platforms. Maybe the one that struck us most, one you might have missed yesterday, the ending of the Northwestern-Purdue game. And one of these little things that they don't have anything in the rule to account for yet, but maybe they should. Drew Crawford, a good player for Northwestern, drives to the basket, gets fouled, is called for a charge, Crawford knowing full well that the Purdue guy who defended him had his feet in the ring. So it could not have been a charge. It had to be a block. So out of frustration, slaps at the basketball. It takes a high bounce. They give him a technical. His second of the game, and he gets ejected. Purdue's going to get free throws. So what did the officials do next? They go to review, as they can do it now in an in-game situation. Oh, yeah, he was right. The Purdue kid's feet were in that lane. We're going to reverse our call. It's a block, not a charge. Does the technical get reversed? No. And maybe they say it doesn't because he did lose his temper, but there should at least be some leeway there. If the officials say, you know what, we did blow the call, there has to be some mitigating circumstances. A lot of times players and coaches will get teed up for questionable calls. But when they're teed up for a call that was genuinely a bad call, admittedly, the officials were wrong, got to be a little bit of leeway there. And by the way, it turns out that it mattered in the point spread. Not only did Purdue make both of the free throws, but the player who had the substitute for Crawford to take those two free throws, he missed one of them. Bizarre ending. A lot of action this weekend. Valentine's coming up tomorrow, so I can't wait to find out what those plans are going to be with Kara. But what do you bring with you in here on Monday?
Well, we got to talk about what's happening in college basketball. And, you know, my thought process for college hoops is that you have to adjust your approach and your process as the season progresses. And one of the things that I love to do in college basketball in November, not so much November, really December and January, I love to bet the home road dichotomy teams, the teams that just don't have the experience, don't have the mettle, can't go on the road and come away with victories. And that's a consistent moneymaker for me in college hoops every year. December, January, the inexperienced teams, the younger teams, the teams that are pressing every time they hit the highway. And you can just bet against those teams again and again and again and cash tickets. Well, what did we see this last weekend? Just a couple of examples. You know, Wisconsin-Green Bay hadn't won on the road all year. They notched their first road win. I took a little bit of a beating when a Boise team that hadn't won on the road all year knocked off Air Force on Saturday night. We saw Tennessee, hadn't won on the road all year, went and won straight up, not just against anyone, they went straight up at Florida. And this is, again, not all that unusual for February basketball. Teams can and do morph as the season progresses. Teams that don't have any experience gain experience in hostile environments. And those sharp home-road dichotomies that are real profit centers in December and January, not so much this time of the year, just something I wanted to discuss and thought we might want to be aware of. Let's start the week by opening up the mailbag. Tons of great emails coming in. We appreciate that. Let's start with this one from Brian from Columbia, Maryland. He starts, Dave and Teddy, do you guys like to parlay the side and total of the same game? Also, have you ever heard of someone being so convinced of a correlation that they had two parlays, one on each side of the same game? For example, parlaying Team A with the under and parlaying Team B with the over in the same contest. Brian concludes, thanks, and keep up the good work. What's the answer, Dave?
The answer is we'd like to do this more than we can. Problem is, it's tougher to do that at some of the books these days. And it's one of the difficulties, of course, in sports betting. And if we've been doing this show for 20 years, we could go back and do archives of 20 years ago and show things that, yes, you should go do this, and say, no, you can't go and do it anymore. Some of the sharper books are aware of this. When we talk about correlated parlays, the notions are, you know, sometimes if you can get a big underdog in a game where the total's low, well, if the total goes under, that means there's a good chance that big underdog likely got that cover. There is a correlation there. The lower the total in the game, the more each point that an underdog gets comes into play. Also, the opposite side of that, where you get some of these underdogs that, you know, that, you know what, if this total goes over, it's not because the underdog scored the points to push it over the total. It's because the favorite did. So, yeah, we could show you a lot of categories in college basketball particularly where you would see that in play. But now your difficulty. One is not a lot of books will take those plays anymore. And if they do, they're going to take them for only small limits because they're aware. Number two, and it's something we haven't talked about on the show yet, but it's profiling at these books. You don't want the books to think that you're the type of sharp that's going to try to pick them off in that particular way. So even books that do take the bets, you want to be a little bit careful with, because once you get profiled, your time at playing with that particular property might be limited. So yes, there is logic there. Yes, it can work. But the practical aspects of putting it into play in 2012 aren't that easy.
And, I mean, to answer the question, the word yes. There are times where I definitely think the correlation is strong. And Dave's talking about difficulties long-term when you're looking at large side and total parlay wagers. You can still get down on a side total parlay on just about every game. May not be for the amount you want, may not be at every book. You can find books that'll take your action with side and total parlays. And there are oftentimes many instances where side and total will be related. What I try to avoid is a situation where I'm going to bet both of these. You know, you're risking 2 units to win 2.6, and you have many different ways you can lose that. So if you're debating, well, favorite and under, dog and over, or vice versa, my suggestion would be to find the better of the two wagers and go with that parlay as opposed to trying to beat them both.
Yeah, if you ever believe you've got a situation where they're both so strong that you should parlay them, go to each of those four components, favorite, over, dog, under. You're likely to find out that a straight bet on the best of those four is going to give you a better return than if you try to do both of the parlays in the same game. We just haven't seen a game where ever it even came to mind the idea that, wow, this is so good, we should do both of them. But one of the sports that we will be getting into soon, pitchers and catchers coming,
yeah.
Baseball does bring you not only some of the best parlay settings, but also the easiest for you to get down on because you don't have that prohibitive favorite aspect. So yeah, come baseball season, there are going to be a lot of times where you say, you know what, we love this pitcher against this offense. We're not necessarily sure if his own offense is going to score enough to back him, but if we go side tied into the parlay for that shutdown game, you can increase your expectancy there. That'll be coming up in baseball soon.
Yeah, pitchers and catchers starting to report. Catchers. Dave, you getting excited?
Moderately, yeah.
Look at him. He's a fan. The fan over here. I'm like, oh, my God, the workload, you know. But Dave's like, oh, yeah, baseball. Anyhow, great question. Really appreciate that question, Brian. Thank you. And please keep those emails coming. We're going to answer as many questions as we can on air on a daily basis. The address, of course, thesportsday@covers.com. You can ask us questions and follow us via Twitter at Vegas Sports Day. And of course, I know many of you have gotten involved in the covers.com community. There are active threads and discussions going right now. Lots of other very interested sports bettors out there. Go to covers.com/posting.
And of course, one of the lightning topics in all the forums right now, Jeremy Lin and the New York Knicks, in the postmortem, spending time to break down this phenomenon, and we might be telling you that there could be even more than meets the eye. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, you know the drill by now. You know if something as big as the Knick turnaround last week happens, we've got to get into the postmortem to find out what's real and what isn't.
On Friday's show, we began to break down Jeremy Lin and this phenomenon. We used a graph to break down the numbers through his first three games. And frankly, you know, they were Magic Johnson-type box scores, as Mr. Malinsky pointed out so clearly. Across-the-board combination of points, rebounds, and assists that we rarely see. And elevated to a high level, obviously, the Knicks won all three of those games. But after beating the Lakers and the T-Wolves over the weekend, the run's now at five games, and a Knick team that was sitting at 8-15 before Jeremy Lin took the court as a starting point guard is now sitting at 13-15. So that means we got to get to work. Where in the hell did this come from, and how do we best adjust moving forward?
To get to the right starting point, of course, we're going to have to go back to those numbers, because it wasn't just now three games of Magic Johnson stats. Now it's been five games. And let's take a look at these numbers, and that tells you that we do need to dig as behind where has that Lin phenomenon come from. Through the last five games, 26.8 points per game, 8 assists per game, 4.2 rebounds. In his court time, the Knicks have been a plus 43. So if we prorate that out, that means 13.9 or almost 14 full points a game over a 48-minute game. For some perspective, for the full season, he'd be number 4 in the league in scoring, number 7 in the league in assists. You get in the MVP race with numbers like that. Okay, now we have to couch it a little bit. Yeah, those five teams they played weren't very good. A combined 57-82. If the playoffs started tomorrow, the Lakers would be the only team that would have made it. So take that difficulty and put it off to the side a little bit. But now take that Lin performance per 48 minutes, and compare it to the point spread. It means the point spread was off 14.5 points per game in those outings. That's pretty substantial now when you run it up to five games. Yeah, those were weak teams that he's up against, but think about that assist count. Your starting lineup, Landry Fields, Bill Walker, Jared Jeffries, Tyson Chandler. That's not easy to get assists. Folks, if those are the guys that you're dishing the ball to, doesn't matter who your opposition is, that 8.0 is pretty real. So if the guy has put these kind of numbers out there that quickly and passes the eye test, you know, making the right moves on the court, managing a game properly, where's he been? Why haven't we seen him playing before?
Well, let's do the background check, Dave. You know, we'll start in high school, where Lin led Palo Alto High School to a 32-1 record and the California State Championship in his senior season, beating Power Mater Dei in the championship game. He was a first-team All-State player coming out of high school. Yet, Lin did not receive a scholarship offer coming out of high school in the Bay Area. He was invited to walk on at Stanford. He was invited to walk on at UCLA. He said, nah, I'm not going to walk on. I'll go get a Harvard education where Tommy Amaker wants me, and were scholarships, obviously, not allowed in the Ivy League. So, did the bigger schools miss the boat? Well, here's a great quote from San Francisco basketball, the Dons head coach Rex Walters, speaking to the New York Times. This is back in September 2010. Here's what Rex Walters said, quote, Most colleges start recruiting a guy in the first 5 minutes they see him because he runs really fast, jumps really high, and does the quick, easy thing to evaluate. There's no question that he was prejudged. You just don't see a lot of Asian kids playing city basketball or playing AAU basketball. So, how did he fare at Harvard? Well, as a senior, he was in the top 10 in the Ivy League in scoring, assists, steals, blocked shots, yes, blocked shots, field goal percentage, and free throw percentage. Top 10 in the Ivies in all of those categories. He made the midseason Final 30 for the John Wooden Award, and he was one of 11 finalists for the Bob Cousy Award, the best point guard in all of college basketball. Yet, Jeremy Lin did not get drafted. That happens at Harvard. You know, I mean, the last Crimson player to wear an NBA uniform before Lin was Ed Smith, who played for the Knicks back in the early 50s. No player from the entire conference, no player in the entire Ivy League, has suited up in the NBA since Chris Dudley did back in 2003. So, on to the NBA. Okay, he's not drafted. He's going to get tryouts. He got a tryout with Golden State. They were able to bring him in, a local hero, you know. But they already had Stephon Curry. They already had Monta Ellis in the backcourt. Didn't really get much of a look there. He only played for 29 games for the Warriors last year, averaging less than 10 minutes per outing, and he never really got a chance to showcase his basketball mentality. This season, well, he was waived before he even played a minute for Golden State. The Warriors liked the rookie, Charles Jenkins, better. And then we saw also Golden State wanted to make sure they had money to go after DeAndre Jordan, which didn't really work out in their favor. So he's signed by the Rockets. What happens in Houston? Another logjam in the backcourt. You know, Houston already had plenty of depth at point guard with Kyle Lowry and Goran Dragic. So he lasted all of 12 days on that Houston roster before being claimed on the Knicks by the Knicks on waivers. And boom, immediately sent down to the D League. But on January 28th, which is maybe the turning point in Jeremy Lin's life, 28 points, 11 rebounds, 12 assists, a triple-double in the D League, leading those legendary Erie Bayhawks to a win. 3 days later, called up to the big team. Now, how confident was Jeremy Lin when he got called up to the Knicks? Not so much. He didn't think he was going to stick with the team. Didn't go apartment shopping, said, all right, I'm going to sleep on my brother's couch for the entirety of this 10-day contract, and then I'll probably get sent back down to the D-League.
So you see a pattern here. Terrific in high school, but no one wants to take a chance because he's not a traditional type of athlete. Terrific in college. I mean, if you're a finalist for the Cousy Award, you know, if you're one of the finalists for the Wooden Award, and you don't even get drafted, something kind of odd here. So now the question comes up, what if he really is this good? What if these were just two mistakes made at the college level and the NBA level because maybe a little bit of profiling, because he's, again, not the prototypical type of athlete, but also if he brings something to play that they're not accustomed to seeing. And this is where we get into some unique aspects of this. Because Lin came from a very different background, he plays basketball differently, takes the court with one goal. My team is supposed to win the game. You don't see a lot of that in the NBA or even in the college ranks. Guys are taking the court to score points, to impress their friends and the girls, to make as much money as they can, to get the endorsements, to do all the big superstar type of plays. And part of the reason why the NBA has been a sloggy league to watch this year is the lack of fundamentals. So, Dare West, what if Lin really is this good? Well, we're not going to answer that question here. We're going to let some guys that know basketball answer that question. Let's start first with Tyson Chandler, the starting center for the Knicks, who's been the beneficiary of a lot of these Lin passes over the past week. Chandler's take on this, that he's not a fluke. Just the confidence he plays with, the pace, the understanding of the game, you can tell when a guy isn't really that skilled but is just having a good stretch. This guy is skilled. Tyson Chandler, of course, knows something about skills. He's got an NBA championship ring. He spent last year playing with Dirk Nowitzki and Jason Kidd, a couple of Hall of Famers who do bring that grit aspect, guys who play hard and compete to win the game and aren't just out there from a showcase standpoint. So let's go to another Knick now, Jared Jeffries. Here's a guy who's been in the league for 10 years, and Jeffries has also been a part of this Knick surge over the past week. The take by Jeffries. The level that he's playing at right now, I have never seen it. He has inspired us to play harder because he gives it his all every day. There is nothing he doesn't do on a daily basis. Hey, these are two guys that know basketball. Chandler with the ring, Jeffries with 10 years of experience. They're saying, you know what? This guy is real. So now we have to start to put these pieces together. What if he is? Because now a big change is going to be taking place this week. Amari Stoudemire, he comes back tomorrow. Carmelo Anthony, he comes back later in the week. And yeah, if you've been a long-term sports fan, you cannot help but have taken a certain pleasure from watching those two guys in street clothes, watching the Knicks go 5-0 without them. You've got to get a certain bizarre pleasure out of it. So now think about this. A Chandler, Stoudemire, Anthony front court, if they're committed to playing, might be the NBA's best. Now they might have a straw to stir the drink. So what's ahead now? Is this going to be this meshing where all these components come together? Or is this going to be the biggest conflagration of egos that we've seen in quite some time?
Well, this could be something that turns into an unmitigated disaster. Operative word, could. We've got two major egos possibly ruining the chemistry that the Knicks have been able to put together over the last week. On the other hand, it could be a team that was struggling because they didn't have a point guard to get the ball to Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony. And they may have now found that missing link. Let's file this away because Lin has been extremely effective on pick and rolls so far in his limited tenure with the Knicks. Stoudemire, as good as any big man in the league at running pick and rolls, and Mike D'Antoni, as good as any coach in the league at designing them. It could work, just like it worked for many years with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire running pick and rolls in Phoenix. And meanwhile, we need to remember the postmortem we did on Carmelo Anthony. Was that last week or 2 weeks ago? I think it was 2 weeks ago. Noting how much of his poor shooting this season may have been because he had to take on additional ball handling responsibilities, responsibilities that Melo not used to having. Could he be able to go back to the player that he is, not having to worry so much about creating? From an X's and O's standpoint, much of this makes sense. But from an ego standpoint, it may not. That makes the Knicks arguably the most fascinating team in all of basketball right now, between now and the All-Star break. A front court, again, with Stoudemire, Chandler, Anthony. That's going to rival any in the league. There's not a front court in the NBA better than the Knicks could bring to the table here. If they have their heads in the game, and if they only have to play to their own strengths, two big ifs, the presence of Lin could allow them to do just that, and that means there's an awful lot of upside sitting there with New York as we watch them right now.
The Knicks won't be on the court tonight, but several other key teams will in a couple of major matchups. We're going to shake them down for you next in Money Time. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Milwaukee, where the Miami Heat 6-point road favorites against the Bucks this evening, and double revenge time for Miami. You know, they've lost both previous meetings this season with the Milwaukee Bucks, a 91-82 win in Miami for Milwaukee, and 105-97 in favor of the Bucks in the rematch 1 week later. Is this a situation where there are real matchup problems for the Heat against the Bucks, or was it just a case of two random results, let's say, in an NBA season that has a fair bit of randomness in it? Well, Let's look at the Milwaukee side here for just a moment. Plus 17 on the scoreboard, despite shooting just 39.9% in those ballgames. So it wasn't hot shooting for Milwaukee. They were plus 12 in turnovers over the two contests. And the real difference maker, the fourth quarter, where Milwaukee's defense against the big three or the big two or the big one, against all of them, has been downright stifling. Milwaukee owned both fourth quarters, combined score 55-37 in the fourth. And there was one other key aspect to those wins, Dave.
Yeah, you talk about the defense in the fourth quarter allowing 37, and offense scoring 55 in the fourth is big. So I thought, okay, what were they doing? How were they attacking it? Well, it was one guy, Brandon Jennings. Jennings absolutely terrific in those two wins against Miami, which will lead to the key question tonight. Which Brandon Jennings are we going to see? Let's take a look at those first two head-to-head games and see the way that Jennings was able to control matters. 54 points, 14 assists, and only one turnover. But since that second win against Miami, only 12.1 points per game, 31.7% shooting, Milwaukee goes 1-5 against the spread. We bring this up for a key reason. Jennings was a guy that we certainly had our eye on because of this condensed schedule. He's an explosive player. But on a good day, he might weigh about 165. Yeah, he tried to put on a little bit of muscle in the offseason, couldn't quite get bulked up as much as he wanted. Last year, we saw key times where Jennings simply wore down. Could that be happening again now in this condensed schedule? The last time they beat Miami, he went 7-for-14 from three-point range. Since that game, he's gone 7-for-35 on his three-pointers. So yeah, if they beat Miami because of what Jennings was able to do, what if Jennings isn't Jennings this evening?
Yeah, I mean, bottom line with Jennings, he's been held under 10 points, held a single digits three times in the Bucks' last five games while they've been struggling against the point spread. And it is worth noting, however, that this Milwaukee defense, we talked about how they were able to shut down Miami in the first two meetings, this is nothing new or different. Last year, final two meetings between these two teams, well, Milwaukee won straight up in Miami, 90-85. Again, look at that score. Heat held just 85 points in that game. And they lost here at the Bradley Center in overtime, a game that was tied 91-all at the end of regulation, another of the Bradley Center, the Kohl Center. But whatever they call the place where they play basketball in Milwaukee these days, that center. But 91-91 at the end of regulation, again, a straight-up loss for Milwaukee. They covered the number, and they were able to put pretty good defense on a Miami team that just hasn't responded well to physical in-your-face defense all season long. Does that change tonight? Well, I mean, Miami, they don't like that type of pressure. The Bucks, you know, they've got Luke Mbamute, someone that they can put in front of LeBron James and have a reasonable expectation that James will not go nuts tonight. And you talk about Steven Jackson, who's a decent counter defensively to Dwayne Wade. So there are clearly some matchups here that have worked in Milwaukee's favor in every recent meeting between these two teams.
Lots of good matchups in our second game tonight. We've got the Clippers going to Dallas. Dallas now a 4.5-point favorite. A thriller between these two the first time around in L.A. Clippers win it 91-89 on a three-pointer by Chauncey Billups at the buzzer. That came right after Jason Terry had hit what seemed like a three-point dagger for Dallas with 5 seconds left. But we're not sure how much of that first meeting carries forward to this one. No Chris Paul in the first game for the Clippers. He's back. Billups is now out. Dirk Nowitzki the first time around, 6-for-18. He was still mired in that shooting slump. So now we're trying to see the Clippers put the pieces together without Billups. Struggled against Cleveland. Came back and whipped the Bobcats, but we don't know what that means. Right now the Bobcats playing at a truly dreadful level. But here's what we do know. Dirk Nowitzki, that shooting slump, that little time off just may have been what he needed.
Oh, yeah. Let's look at the numbers here because the numbers tell a very clear story about Dirk Nowitzki, a guy who we were pretty harsh on this show during the early part of the season. Look at the numbers. Last five games, Dirk, 26.4 points per game, 53.8 field goal shooting, almost 54% from the floor. And a guy who was standing on the perimeter jacking up jumpers has now been getting to the free throw line like he does when he's playing at his best. 29 free throw attempts during that five-game span for Dirk. So this is a Dallas team that also gets Jason Kidd, or has gotten Jason Kidd back in the lineup after he missed six games. And perhaps like Dirk, This could be another example of a player getting a real boost from missing time and then coming back fresher, particularly a player with, 38-year-old legs like Jason Kidd. However, if you've watched Kidd match up against Chris Paul in seasons past, it's been a very one-sided matchup. Admittedly, those teams were in New Orleans, not this Clippers team, but Jason Kidd has had a very, very hard time with Chris Paul. Chris Paul is younger, quicker, and better at this stage of his career.
That's going to be the big thing to watch in this game tonight. And we do this a lot in the season to project to the playoffs. How do the coaches tactically address these things tonight? Is it going to be Jason Kidd against Chris Paul, or are we going to see Roddy Bubois off the bench earlier? You may see Bubois more with the first team against Paul and less in the secondary parts of the game. But part of the weakness we see for the Clippers, though, and we're going to probably address this in a postmortem during the course of the week, this is still an awfully small backcourt. Foy and Paul playing together, you're giving up a lot of size to Vince Carter and to Jason Kidd. That's a matchup difficulty that you've got because each can be posted up. And what we may see Dallas try to do now is say, okay, we've had trouble with Chris Paul in the past. No, we're going to go post him up. Force Paul to have to guard a bigger guy, either Carter or Kidd, down near the basket. On the other end, some fascinating matchups. Nowitzki against Griffith? No, or is it going to be Sean Marion to possibly try to defront him and try to deny the ball from him? Lots of interesting pieces that come into play here. Nothing that we can use to make a bet tonight. We're not likely to get to the window unless there's some line movement. But plenty to learn going forward. And that's one of the things you want to do this time of year. If you see a potential playoff matchup coming up ahead, start to follow the chess match right now.
When we come back, it's time for a complete Big Monday breakdown here on Vegas Sports Day, starting with a major showdown in Louisville.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's start tonight in Louisville, Kentucky, where the Syracuse Orange, 3-point road favorites against Rick Pitino's Cardinals. And, you know, some of these Big East Monday night showdowns become real slogs because teams are tired off a Saturday performance, but not necessarily this one. There's outstanding depth on both of these squads that could make this a really fun game to watch. And the Syracuse, they may well be the deepest team in the nation. All hands on deck right now. Their bench outscored UConn's bench by 27 points in their thunderous second half against the Huskies to get the win and cover this past weekend. You know, Louisville, however, one of the few teams that may have the depth to match up. They've got Wayne Blackshear back in the lineup. Louisville bench outscored West Virginia's bench by 20 in their wild come-from-behind win against the Mountaineers. And with Blackshear, Russ Smith, and Jared Swoshire are all legitimate potential starters for a team that they can only start five. They got eight guys of that caliber.
So as we get to this time of year, there are certain coaches that we look to play on and some that we look to play against. And at the very top of this list, the guy we would send the early Valentine to, Rick Pitino. Because of his time in the NBA, Pitino's learned a lot about having to manage players over the course of a long season, but also getting your team to peak at the right time. And boy, has he done a terrific job with this. Let's look at Rick Pitino strictly in the month of February, that second pass through the conference play when you're trying to bring your team together for the tournament. The last six seasons, 32-8 straight up, an awfully impressive straight up because those are almost all Big East games. 28-12 against the spread, 70% over 40 samples. That's really significant when you're a high profile like Louisville is. It's not like he's doing this under a radar screen somewhere. It's one of the most visible programs in the country. I'll tell you what's also interesting about this matchup. We talk about Pitino and preparation. Since coming to the Big East, 7-1 straight up, 6-1-1 against the spread, against Jim Boeheim in Syracuse and that 2-3 zone. He lost the first one. After he got that look at the zone, 7 straight wins, 4 of those wins coming in double figures. So you see a little bit of a tactical thing here. His team's coming together at the right time. He knows how to solve the Syracuse zone. But now, a little bit of a conundrum. Pitino loves to press to wear the other team down. Likes to scramble, get the game out into the open court. That's dangerous against Syracuse this year. Nobody runs the floor better than Syracuse. You're not going to wear them down because they got so many bodies. They love to run the floor. Might this be one of the times where his preferred tactic might get him in a little trouble in some stretches?
Yeah, I mean, the Orange, not a team likely to lose a turnover battle here by margin against Louisville. That Cardinal pressure is tough. Syracuse can handle that pressure. Look at them. They're plus 74 in turnover ratio through the first 13 Big East games. They have 111 steals and 100 blocked shots. That's a team getting the job done on the defensive end of the court. But Syracuse road schedule, when we start to really break this down, probably the weakest road slate any team has faced in the Big East so far this season. Look at it. At St. John's, at Cincy, at Notre Dame, at Villanova, at Providence, at DePaul. You know, the best of that group, I guess, Notre Dame. Notre Dame's the best of that group. That's where Syracuse suffered their first loss of the season. The second best of that group, probably Cincinnati. Syracuse, life and death to win that game in the final minute, despite the fact that the Bearcats couldn't, I mean, that was a brick fest in that ballgame. Cincy couldn't hit a shot, 34% from the floor, 33% from the free throw line, and yet Syracuse, life and death against the Bearcats to win that game on the highway. So, by far, this will be the toughest road test that Syracuse has faced in Big East play. Have to see how well they handle it.
And just one other little totals alert for those of you who like to play them. This is one of these classic potential scrambles. If this game is a one-possession game with a minute and a half left, you'll be able to order a pizza and have it delivered before the final score gets posted. This could be one of those where the teams will play it all the way out. ESPN Nightcap might bring us the same if it's close late. Two teams that will get after each other, play it out. Kansas going to Manhattan to face their rivals, Kansas State. The road Jayhawks, a 4-point favorite right now. The 274th Sunflower Showdown. Second meeting between these two this season. First, it was ugly over in Lawrence. 67-49 for Kansas. But almost a little bit uglier than that because of the way it happened. And that has become our starting point tonight. We're not accustomed to ever seeing a Frank Martin team get pushed around underneath the basket. We got accustomed to that over those 40 minutes, and that's where we've got to start as we break down the rematch.
Yeah, you have to look at these Kansas rebounding numbers in the first meeting because it could give us a hint about what's going to happen tonight. Let's pop up that graphic. Kansas rebounding the first time around. They won the battle 48-24, out-rebounded Kansas State by a 2-1 margin. When Kansas missed a shot, they got 17 offensive rebounds. Kansas State only 13 defensive rebounds. That's about as one-sided as you're going to find a rebounding matchup between two top 25 teams, like they both were at the time of that first meeting. Now, Robinson and Relaford, the two stars for the Jayhawks, they had more rebounds in 64 minutes than the entire Kansas State team did in their 200 floor minutes. Size mismatch or intensity? It's what Bill Self said after the game, the Kansas head coach. Quote, I thought the first game we did an exceptional job getting the majority of the 50-50 balls. That's intensity. At least Self is calling it that way. And that's been a Kansas trait all season long. They have a tremendous work ethic for a team built around the stars, Robinson and Tyshawn Taylor, but they have some role players elsewhere on the roster. Look at this past weekend on Saturday against Oklahoma State, a 48-19 rebounding edge over Oklahoma State. That's about as big as big of a margin as we'll ever see in a conference of this class.
So we expect Kansas State to play a little harder than the first meeting because we noted that self aspect, saying, you know what, we got to the majority of the 50-50 balls. It's almost his way of saying we out-hustled them. So it wasn't just physical superiority. Kansas State will hustle here, and you're getting a little added value in the spread because Kansas State lost to Texas Saturday. But we have to address the nature of that loss, and we've been here before. Started early in the year when we saw Rhode Island, non-conference team in the Atlantic 10, go to Texas, get hosed a little bit. We saw Temple on a Saturday afternoon go to and get outright hosed. Fran Dumpy's team absolutely not given a fair chance by the officials in that basketball game. So what happened when conference play started? You dial back this show a couple of weeks, and you talk about Travis Ford, the Oklahoma State coach, complaining about the officiating for a game at Texas. And that took us to Saturday, and we would absolutely love it if Frank Martin was given immunity, knowing Martin and his nature, to talk about what happened there. Kansas State had a double-figure lead at halftime in Austin. They lost it, ended up losing the game by 11, because in the second half, free throw attempts were 28-0 for Texas. You will never, ever, ever see that when it's the other side that's ahead in double figures to begin the half. Usually when you see big disparities, it's when one team is losing and they're fouling to catch up. Kansas State didn't attempt a free throw the last 27 minutes of that game. Now, this is a physical game between two tough teams going head-to-head. When all the counting was done, total free throw attempts were 48-12. Texas had more free throw attempts than field goal attempts. And again, they were losing big, down 13 at halftime, down 15 in the second half. State wasn't fouling Texas to catch up late. So someone did ask Frank Martin, but he was not granted immunity. The only comment he had to say, I didn't officiate, you have to ask them. That was, and that's all you can say without getting fined by the league. But now there's at least four games now that are just awfully, awfully suspicious. And again, this is not a gambling aspect we're talking about here. This is the Longhorn Network aspect, where there is actually financial reward to the people involved in that network, ESPN and others. The better Texas plays, the more value that network has. We didn't think this was going to happen in conference play. In retrospect, the Rhode Island and the Temple games, yeah, that can happen. ESPN's got a deal here. They don't have a deal with the Atlantic 10 at all. So if Rhode Island and Temple loses, that doesn't matter. But there's no way to explain that disparity in the fouls called in that game from Saturday. We expect to hear more from Martin in the days ahead. But hopefully when that happens, we're not worried about that because we got a little more money in our pocket. There's somewhere we can go on the Monday night board for some profits.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a little bit blown away by this total, Dave. I thought it would come significantly lower than it did, but that'll allow us to take advantage. It's play of the daytime here on Vegas Sports Day, and we're going to take a look at a game we talked about just a few moments ago. We're breaking down the NBA. We're going to take the Bucks and the Heat under 201. You know, we talked about the defensive matchups. We talked about the success Milwaukee has had against the Big Three. And we talked about the struggles that the Bucks are having with their own offensive game plan right now. Heat in the middle game of their first back-to-back-to-back of the season. That's not an effort, a place where we expect them to push the pace. And Milwaukee, pushing the pace, not really their MO. We're going to take Miami and Milwaukee under 201. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up for the Monday edition. Thank you so much, really, for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games. Good luck.